Da 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 da! Fuck man!
You're listening to Blue Yonder with your hosts, Jim Jones,
Fuck Man,
Peter Streets,
Fuck Man,
and introducing Aaron Hubbard.
Fuck Man!
We should cast about board gaming ethics and dicks in board gaming, or just gaming ethics in general.
I was about to say that. A lot of the board game ethics would also apply to modern-day online games. You know
for
how
sure.
Will
yeah.
Wheaton says, don't be a dick, right?
Okay, we need to talk about this subject.
We need to, wait, before we do that, though, we need to come up with a pseudonym.
All right.
Let's call him Butt Cheek.
let's call him Ass Bag.
Let's call him Ass Cheek. So we had his friend Ass Cheek.
All right. Okay, I have a story about Ass Cheek. The first time I went to a LAN party, we were sitting down to play Jedi Knight. And Jedi Knight, at the time, was one of the first LAN multiplayer games, right?
Well, I mean, Doom was the first of that.
Sure, it wasn't the first, but it was...
Yes,
the. No, I'm saying Jedi Knight wasn't the first,
okay.
But it was very early on. And so the security on these things wasn't very good yet. And what you can do, and what Ass Cheek did, is he opened the config files. And normally, the settings for like all your force powers and your health and stuff were set to a certain default. And you couldn't go above that. And that number was 6. And so what he did is he went into the config, he manually edited it to set all of his settings to 10. Whereas we were all playing at 6. And he was walking around, force choking us to death in like half a second. We'd be dead on the ground. And it would take like a minute to kill him. So he was literally walking around through the game, just force choking everybody left and right. And we could do nothing. He would force push us off of cliffs. He would force jump to places that we couldn't get to.
The funny thing about Ass Cheek was that he always does it to the extreme. Like if he had set it instead of 6 to 8,
yeah,
he still would have had a clear advantage. But right. He wouldn't have been like, he probably would have just thought, geez, Christ, he is a good player.
Yeah, but when you almost double your force power, you know something is up.
Yeah.
So he wasn't very
smart about
it.
He wasn't smart enough to just give himself the edge.
He
had to actually go over the edge.
I think he was smart enough. He knew that we would notice, but he was just too greedy. Like, he wanted that extra power. He knew he could squeeze more out, and so he wanted it.
My read on Ass Cheek was that he thought he was smarter than everybody else. So he would tell, like, bald-face fucking lies and cheat openly, thinking that you wouldn't call him on it because you wouldn't smoke him out. And I'm like, really? It's like, he cheated in the RPG game that Peter here hosted way back when.
How do you cheat in an RPG?
First of all, he min-maxed his character, which that always really pisses me off when I...
That's not cheating.
Well, what it is, he joined a group of characters that actually legitimately built a full featured character, and we were into the role-playing. And he joined and played and rolled some munchkin fucking... min-max class, but then I watched him with my own eyes fucking cheat dice. The best possible score you can get is 18. He'd be like, whoa, 18 strength, wow, and then like next one, 18 intelligence, I'm on a roll. And it's like, everything was 17 or 18, so it's like, that was funny, and I knew he was kind of like this anyway. So I just surreptitiously, because I was helping this other person, I looked over, and the motherfucker was just lying about what came up and then loudly announcing it and then writing it down. And I'm thinking that even in his mind, he thought, well, somebody might actually start watching me after the first three, but I know that the first three are the only ones that really give a shit, you know? So he basically got a character who was 18, 17, 18. He was playing a Trandoshan and I was a Wookiee, but he picked Trandoshan specifically for the species advantage that was granted him. Then he was a soldier, which was, like, for a level 1 character, the best at combat, and me and this other guy had rolled a realistic character who was just average to combat, but anyway,
was his plan to kill your character in the game? It sounds like he was, ever since that last headshot in Half-Life 2, I've always wanted revenge.
Yeah, that was a guy who was, he not only was he kind of being a douchey player, but he was fucking cheating, and I saw him cheat.
It's kind of hard to cheat at an RPG, because as the DM, you can just make it harder on that character, right? I mean,
yeah,
so he min-maxes, okay, well now he's facing 3 enemies instead of the 2 he would have been had he rolled correctly.
Sure,
exactly.
You can.
Yeah.
I mean, you
can always outscale him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
If everybody in a party is a min-maxer, it's not that big a deal because you're all equally good. What happens is if the rest of the party decides we're going to build a realistic character, we're going to roll them honestly, and we're going to assign their values as it would make sense to their backstory and role. If you have that kind of balanced character and there's one fucking min-maxer munchkin in it, then what he becomes is almost a god.
Well, then because you just he's fucking basically, kill him immediately.
He's basically two levels better than you all the time.
There is kind of an ethics to it, and it does fit in with our topic of ethics in gaming.
Yeah.
Because no matter what you do, there are going to be the butt cheeks out there. Not all of them are cheaters. Our personal friend Butt Cheek was so into victory, it was so much a part of his identity to be this kind of guy that was always dominating that he went to the dark side to get the power, right? That's the classic classic foible
he
of the hero's journey.
He
is absolutely the archetype. He would be the Anakin Skywalker of our group. He would grab a hold of any unethical action as long as it produced power, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
He would lie to his friends, to their faces, and he would cheat in rolling dice and things like this. There is the Jedi to that Sith, is what I'm trying to say. Let's use our friend Ass Cheek as the Sith example. Okay, let's look at the min-maxer who's the Jedi. That's the person that's going to actually take a hard look at the rules of the game, study them in depth, think about them, strategize a legal way to make their character the best it can be. That player is a power gamer, and I'd say our friend Ass Cheek was a power gamer, just so much so that he delved into the dark side to do it.
Also, power gamers, total fucking assholes.
Sometimes, yeah, they can be pricks.
Whatever. What about, like, FPS power gamers, where you're memorizing maps and you're knowing the best places to stand? I mean, do you call those people good or
agreed.
Asshole cheaters?
Min-maxing is the point in every single game
except for RPGs. Yeah.
A CRPG, min-max the hell out of it.
Min-maxing seems like the opposite of what you want to do in any RPG. RPG.
Yeah,
Why?
Because you're there to enjoy the experience of interacting with your friends and living through this journey, not to just kill the monster the fastest.
Okay.
Well, that's exactly right.
And I only challenge that, Jim, due to the fact that I kind of agree with you. However, this is kind of more of a cast, I guess, about ethical behavior.
Yeah.
So we've all agreed our friend Ass Cheek is not the kind of friend that's really the friend you want at your gaming table. He's not really the one you want on the other side of your high-speed internet connection, because he's probably cheating. He's probably using an aimbot or something.
Oh, yeah. Also, the other thing annoying about him is he would always accuse other people of cheating.
Like, that's the worst.
He accused me of cheating.
Did he really?
I'm a VGA Planets game. I know he could accuse me of cheating. And, like, if you know anything about me, I'm like a gaming paladin.
Uh-huh.
To the point that, like, kind of like Inigo Montoya fight left-handed, in that I will constantly talk about what the enemy should do if I were him. Like, I play both sides of the board.
You definitely do that.
And I'll be, and like, some of the times I'll be like, I did this and I fortified that, but man, if you come here and hit here at the Suez Canal, I'm fucked. And like, why did I say that? And like, people are like, well, don't mind if I do. And at first, I think some people, they think I'm bamboozling them, because it's like, oh, he's trying to get me to do what he wants. No, seriously, if I were you, that's what I would have done to me to fuck me over. And I can't, it's a sickness I have, but every single person I've gamed with, I've seen him accused of cheating, and he's the biggest bald-faced cheater there is.
Yeah, that's like, he's playing Risk, he's attacking you, and you're defending, and he calls out 666, and you call out 666, and he says liar, when he's just rolled a 4-2-3
right.
or something.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway, ethics in gaming, guys. What else we got on that topic?
I have a ton of stuff about this. I mean, you guys know my dad, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if we want to talk ethics in gaming, we just mentioned my dad's name.
Let's go there, dude.
Jim's dad.
Lead the way, Jim.
Have we ever discussed Jim's dad, even in Power Play? I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
No. This is a new
topic.
The
only time we've mentioned it was in the Geek Bliss episode, which may or may not have aired by the time this does. We talked briefly about him. But to understand the mind of my father, it's like unraveling a series of horribly entangled knots and opening Pandora's box. because there are some serious issues going on there.
Oh, my. And, you know, I don't disagree with that description, no matter as harsh as it is.
Yep.
He's... Oh, man, I don't even know how to explain it. See, I think I might be too close to this to really explain it well. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, I've got stories, if you want to hear it from my perspective.
I mean, I have stories, I just don't know how to express his overall psyche.
Well, I don't either. I would think if anybody did, you would, because you have a little bit more insight, I'm sure.
And there's a little bit of that in me as well. I mean, we can talk about my gaming ethics stuff.
So you've really come into your own... Yeah, he has. You're like 85% of the way there.
Okay, well, we'll talk about my father first, and then we'll move to me afterward.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, well, you tell me, what is the deal here? What's going on in this Pandora's box?
What I know of your dad is... The days we would spend over there Sunday afternoons, and we would get together, and it would usually be over pizza and wrist.
Nearly every weekend, too.
For a long time, years. This was a recurring thing we did. It was a ton of fun. I had some of the best gaming moments of my life during this period of time.
Yeah.
And Jim's dad, to describe him kind of like a Al Capone kind of character... This kind of, he will kill himself to kill you.
He will put a gun in his mouth on your part.
If you're behind him, just to shoot him. And that's if you cross him.
Yes, this is like the scene in Die Hard 4 where he shoots through his own shoulder to kill the guy.
Absolutely.
This is my dad.
Yeah, I guess
that's him. And now, I would say I've caught him cheating.
Sure.
We've all seen him roll dice behind a box no one could see and verify rolls from.
And quickly scoop them up so that no one can verify.
And quickly scoop them.
Yep.
Absolutely. I have witnessed with my two eyes him play chess with one of our friends who we've yet to talk about.
I think we should come up with a name for this guy.
The Orfmeister.
Orfmeister. Okay.
Orfmeister.
Any of those will do.
Anyway, so I'm watching your dad play our friend Orfmeister, and he puts your father into check with a pawn. And he grabs our friend Orfer's hand while it's on the piece and forcibly places it back on the square it was, and said, "You're not moving there, Arthur! Arthur, you're not making that move, Arthur! No, Arthur, you're not going there, Arthur!" And he totally mind-fucks this retard into submission!
He doesn't even do it with submission! It's not even with finesse, either. Against the Orfmeister, he doesn't use finesse, he just uses brute force. So he will literally take the piece, put it back where it was, and then become irate so that the Orfmeister can do nothing about it unless he wants to, like, almost physically challenge him.
Yes.
Like, you have to.
It is almost to that point.
In his fist.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, back to the ethics issue here with Jim's father.
Yes.
I've seen him cheat at dice rolls, and the classic thing about this personality is... that if you're good to him at the start of a campaign, say, for example, in Risk, he will be your friend, and he will pretend he likes you, and he will laugh, and he will joke, and he will be perfectly calm and polite.
As long as you're playing into his plan.
The instant you take a single one of his armies, even if it had a tactical advantage for himself in the future, any instant you graze against his forces, it is on like Donkey Kong.
It is on, and he will become... His personality will transform into this monster. He will become irate. He will begin telling you exactly how he's going to destroy you. He will tell you exactly why that was a bad move.
In a very excited tone of voice, too. In a very excited...
Yeah, very,
and keep in mind, this is a grown man playing with boys.
Yes. Everyone there is, let's say, 15 to 22. Yeah.
Yeah, like I was when I first started going, I was like 16 or 17, and you know maybe Jason.
And this lasted for years.
I mean,
you were going.
I was going up until I got married. Yeah,
but still, I mean, by no means a man compared to someone in their 50s.
Sure.
No, especially when I was 17 and this crazy silver-haired Italian mafioso guy is screaming at me. And I'm like, I don't want any of that. I don't think I ever crossed Jim's dad. Yeah. However, the other thing that I did fall afoul of on Jim's dad, and here's another gaming ethics, is he would also be your friend up until you were of no further use to him and also not a threat. And then he'd start attacking you and we'd be like, what the fuck, Jim's dad? He'd be like, well, he'd lay out this logical case that made no sense about why what he was doing was okay.
So he's either justifying why he's killing you or he's killing you crazily.
If someone else did the exact same thing to him, he would not take it nearly as well as he expected you to when he did this to you.
Right.
Yeah.
He would freak out, like you said.
I remember one time when you were the 18, Jim, probably one of the last times we all played.
Yeah, you got
fucking crazy mad at him, and it became some kind of ABC after school special. Yeah. Though, guess what, Dad? You've always fucked me over in these games, and now the one time I've
you have to understand, this has been built. We have been playing this game for years and years.
This is not an exaggeration to say, for well over 10 years at that point, we'd been playing.
Yeah, and you guys are assuming that it was just on Sundays when you were there. No.
I'm not.
We played Monopoly all the time. We played Uno. We played any game you can imagine that we would play. Yahtzee. This same thing would happen. If I roll a fucking full house, it's like the end of the world. And so this has been building and building and building for years and years. And finally, there was this one game I was doing really well.
Were you here for this, Peter?
Yeah,
I remember.
Everyone was there. And I was doing good, and the only force that could really stop me, and the only thing that I was worried about, was my dad. Because, for one, I knew his attitude. I kind of avoided him as long as I could, but eventually the game came to this crossroads where I had to make a decision. Am I going to attack and try and win, or am I going to leave him alone and let him essentially win? And so I said, fuck it, I'm going to attack him. And, of course, the switch flips, and he turns into this crazy irate power gamer guy. And at that point, I had just, I lost it. I was like, okay, I've had enough of this shit. It has been years that I've been enduring the irate, screaming madman behind the scenes here. And I'm going to give him a taste of his own medicine. And so I flipped out on him. And I was like, that's it. You do this every time. All I did was play the freaking game. This is what I had to do. I laid it out very logically, but all this excited tone. And I was like, you do this every time. I am never playing this game with you again. Never. That's it. Done.
Yeah.
I was so angry. Yeah, so angry.
Yeah, you were, man. Epic. I was kind of scared because I thought, oh, man, am I seeing the gaming group dissolve? Because you sounded dead serious.
Oh, man.
I am never playing this again.
I mean, at the time, yeah.
Oh.
His character is such that his catchphrases have entered into our lexicon.
Oh, God, yeah.
I don't even, that's it, I'm all in, I'm taking us both out.
That's what would happen. Inevitably, when you attack him, the first time you even touch his armies, he would be like, that's it, I'm taking everything I got, and I'm coming against you. Every single turn, I'm going to hit you until we are both dead. I'm all in, we are both going out.
When you heard that, it's like when Jules quoted you to scripture. It meant your ass.
Yes,
you were not winning that game because he's definitely not going to win it. But and you are definitely not going to win it because he's going to, even to the point of playing against his own best interest, whoop on you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he doesn't care.
Only a few times did I ever try to reason with your dad and be like, okay, listen, I understand why you're upset. I know that what I did was kind of dirty, but at the same time, we both still have a good shot at winning this.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think if you just, ignore this, maybe we can work together in the future.
Uh-huh.
But there was nothing I could do to stop his rage.
There was no talking him out of it.
There was no reason. There was nothing. It's over. I mean, you're going to be fighting him for the rest of the game. He's kind of like a disease in a role-playing game.
You're gonna take status damage.
Yeah, each turn you have to roll a saving throw against Jim's dad.
Emotional assault.
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, that all comes back to the ethics of just being a good sport. I mean, people. It's a game. It's a game of conflict. You're supposed to have people attacking you and you attacking them. You've got to understand that. And when you become irate at the smallest infraction, it just totally ruins the game and ruins everybody's enjoyment of the game, in my opinion.
It increased my enjoyment of the game quite a bit, actually, because it was so funny. Because, and like, what's so funny is I saw him playing with his brother-in-law.
Oh,
what's that game? Like, it's not Othello.
Backgammon. Backgammon.
They're playing backgammon.
Backgammon.
And if anything, his dad was crazier dealing with a grown man. Because
oh, yeah.
I was like, he actually held back on us kids. He it was a nonstop, relentless smack talk, like a machine gun pitch. That's how he was assaulting this man. He emasculates you.
See, this is kind of a good strategy. I mean, there's these mind games you play during games where you can throw someone off their game just by the words you say.
Yeah. And he is unusually competent.
That's why there's so much trash talking in sports.
For
I mean,
sure.
Look at like NBA basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they trash talk to screw with the heads of their opponent.
Yeah, he's also unusually good. You can't be a clown and pull this off. I mean, he was good.
He was
legitimate
very good.
Threat to win every game.
He was intimidating. I mean, literally. Like,
yeah.
You felt like you were in the fight for your life. He made you feel like you were. And when you are, you don't think very well because you're kind of emotional. And when you're emotional in a strategy game, you might as well go home.
Sure.
Because it's over.
And like you
so,
said,
I don't deny there's tactics to it. It's just not very fun to play against someone like that. Good sportsmanship, I think, is what makes a group have fun together. I'm kind of the gaming mindset. I know Aaron claims to be the paladin. I guess I'm kind of on the same team in that I think the goal is if the group is having fun as a group, then you're successful.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the ideology that is instilled in me while I'm reading Dungeon Master's Guide 3. You know, beating your players is not your goal. You don't want to make people feel bad. You want them to feel good. You want them to enjoy the experience. And in a competitive game where everybody's against everybody else, it's harder to have that. But that's where being a good sport comes in, I think.
Sure. And the sportsmanship is a big factor of gaming ethics. I mean, nobody likes to play against people who become irate and get angry when they are either beaten or things are not going their way. I mean, because like you, that's kind of the point of games that are conflict games. You're trying to beat the other players. And so inevitably that's going to happen to you. And you have to know how to take that well and be courteous to the other players and not ruin their experience just because you are not doing well in the game.
Yeah, I was just going to remark that lastly, as a follow-up to that excellent statement by Jim, is in a game where everybody has an army and they're all fighting over territory, and it's not a friendly game.
Sure.
It's by definition a game of war. So if you approach it with this attitude of, hey, the first person that assaults me is going to get this huge unleashed wrath, is kind of ignorant. And honestly, he lost a lot of games doing that. You might see that there's some strategy to it, and he's definitely very effective on the person he unleashes the beast on.
Sure.
But he ends up losing ultimately because he foolishly expends all his forces on this vengeance.
Along those lines, I have to just say this. If anybody is familiar with the game of Risk, I'm sure a lot of people are, Australia is kind of one of the things you go for at the very beginning of the game. It's a stronghold, it's hard to get into, and you can easily escape from it and push out into Asia. And my dad, every game, would inevitably end up owning half of Australia, and someone else would own the other half. Most of the time, it was the Orfmeister.
Yeah.
And the fury
Classic.
That would build inside of him when you placed your first piece into Australia is unlike any fury. I mean, this is like Gandalf fighting whatever fire monster is
the
in the
Balrog.
Fucking movie.
You shall not have Australia!
Yes, that is my father trying to claim Australia as his own. And when you put pieces in there, he would flip out. And that ultimately, like, he would begin the game in a losing phase because he would tell you, we both lose the game if you put armies in here. If you fortify this, we're both going out because I will attack you.
Yeah.
We're going to fight in here until we're both dead. And that, to me, was totally ridiculous.
Yeah, was
that
I
always
agree.
By definition, that's what happens if both people fortify in Australia. I mean, that's a classic.
You both lose.
Classic
yeah.
blunder.
It's a classic
yep.
FU, because the other thing is, if you commit...
One of the two classic blunders.
Yeah.
Well, if you commit to Australia, that by definition means you're not going to have, like, a foothold in Europe or definitely South America or some of the other desirable, or, like, tip of Africa. You're not going to have those other desirable areas because you chose a place, country, and his thing. So that was always an intense psychological gambit anyway. But, yeah, Jim's dad took the nuclear option.
Every time.
Yeah.
All the times I've ever gone for Australia and actually claimed it in its entirety, I've always came in second. Every time.
Yeah, it's because Australia is safe, but it's not very effective.
It's safe, but it's also, you can't spread out.
Kind of stagnate, yeah.
Yeah, you trap yourself. Plus you get less armies than anything.
I don't think I've grown into that role quite yet. You said I was about 85% there?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I'd say about 50%.
Okay, there's a balance that I'd like to strike, where I get in people's heads, I can intimidate them, but I don't have to become irate. I don't have to... I like to keep it more on a joking level, I think.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that makes everyone have more fun in the long run, because they can laugh at me being ridiculous and telling them how they're going to lose, but I'm not really making anyone feel bad.
You're going into your father's rants, but almost always ironically.
Yes.
I was thinking, like, your imitation, but you're right, you're only imitating, it's the actual, that's only half of it, the emotional force behind it is the other, you don't have that.
Yeah, and I don't want that, like, I could probably go for that if I tried, but I don't want to. It ruins everybody's enjoyment.
I think, Jim, that gives you an edge when you're fighting an opponent that doesn't know your dad, because they aren't going to see through the ploy as easily. They might actually fall for some of the BSing that you do. But then whenever I'm like playing a game of Magic the Gathering or something with you and across the table, you're sending these vibes my way.
Sure.
I kind of think back at your dad and go, you know, that was always a sign of weakness. Every time that your dad resorts to that, it's because he's vulnerable.
And you're mostly right about that. I pretty much only do it when I don't have the upper hand.
Yeah, and it's a last resort. Like, you're reaching for a sidearm.
Yeah.
It's like you're out of ammunition. Oh, shit, the gun's jammed. You toss it on the ground. You grab for your sidearm and pull it out, and you're still popping a few caps out.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, when I see him unleash the beast in your style, which is nowhere nearly as obnoxious, by the way, as your dad, it's actually pretty funny. I start to think, oh... And just recently, actually, playing you games, I start to think, just maybe you're in a vulnerable state, and now's the time to strike, or that you actually don't have the nuts in your hand, it's just a couple islands.
Yeah, and I've noticed correspondingly, when Jim goes silent and, like, poker-faced, that means he has got you by the fucking balls.
Yeah. So he tightens his game up.
Yeah,
he does.
I think every intermediate Magic player does that to some degree, because, like, you can almost see, like, the wave of cleverness come over them.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like, eyebrow raises.
Like, combo has been initiated, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, everything becomes like, are you declaring attackers? Oh, really?
Right. It's kind of like they're setting you up for it.
Yeah, and I need to start, like, I think an effective way to game would be to do that constantly. Like, every single time, like, now, is this a declared attacker's phase? And it's kind of, okay, proceed.
But I want to talk a little bit about what is borderline ethical and what is not. Because I was, as we were talking about, like, what I tend to do during Magic matches, I was thinking back to some of the stuff that I've heard that the pros do when they're playing Magic, and some of the stuff that I've even done at the table with you guys. Like, there was this one night, not too long ago, it was set up so that you had two creatures that had equipment attached, and they were both flying. The equipment gave them flying. I had two flyers on my side, and they were smaller than both of your creatures. And I swung in, and you looked at the board, and you said, both of my guys are flying, and they're both bigger than yours. And then that's when I kind of slipped into this pretend, oh, I didn't notice that sort of thing. And I don't think I really ever said I didn't notice that, but I said... Oh, they're both flying? Something along those lines. And I fully
knew. Like, you
were
disappointed a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of tried to portray it. I was acting. I was Hollywooding, like they do in poker. And then after the attack, of course, you blocked both of them, killed both of them, and I played another card that killed both of your guys and cleared the board. But you guys both thought that I had nothing in my hand from the way that I was acting.
Yes.
How far do you think you can go with that without crossing the line into unethical gaming?
Well, I don't think it's unethical, but I will say that the two most hated mechanics for me in games are deception and random chance, which means I detest poker. But I actually view it as unchivalrous, I guess. And I, like, again, I'm the gaming paladin.
Sure.
To give your opponent less than perfect information that they're entitled to.
Really?
So,
wow.
And like, I am warped in the way I... Because as I say that, I'm like, well, why am I entitled to know what's in Jim's hand? So it's like,
well,
he
not.
Is properly denying me that information, but somehow, again, I'm such a freaking paladin that almost to a goofy degree that I'm like trying to give the opponent... I would consider not only is it my obligation to give him accurate information he is entitled to, but I should also avoid giving him inaccurate information. I think that's the distinction.
So you think, so by that standard, I went over the line.
Yeah, but I mean, again, I realize I'm warped.
I play Magic the Gathering online, as well as play face-to-face with you and also at other Friday Night Magics. Friday Night Magic is a totally different thing at your local game store than sitting in front of your monitor playing a stranger on the other side of the world. You don't have their body language to consider. You don't have all these things called, if you look up Jedi mind tricks, like on wizards.com, there'll be articles about the very thing Jim did against Aeron. And it's perfectly valid. It's a part of the face-to-face magic experience that works into the actual mechanics of the game that are totally left out of the Magic Online element.
Yeah.
So if you just, you know, you may not like that style, in which case Aeron says he doesn't like poker very much because that's very much a part of the game of poker. I mean, they're unethical when they're bluffing. There's no, you know, a bluff in real life.
A core skill mechanic is deception in that game. Exactly. Which is anathema to me.
See, I'm coming... I do play a lot of poker, and I kind of come from that background as far as card games go. And so that just kind of felt natural to me to kind of bluff him with that. I mean...
I was, like, doing this we're not worthy thing after the play. Like, I was like, oh my, that is awesome. Because I actually respected that. I thought it was an excellent play.
And I do respectable too. One. I do too. Whenever I see someone pull off that, I always think, wow, that's a hell of a competitor, but I can't bring myself to do it. I lost a major Doom tournament in the Midwest because I was beating a guy 49-1 with the BFG, just BFG bitching him in one of these really unbalanced Dwango maps where it says you run a simple pattern. You go like 200 point, 200 shield, big energy pack, BFG, you run that circle, and you kill him every time you see him.
Like in GoldenEye?
It's no fun. So I decided, like, I didn't want to go out that way, because I looked at the dude's face, and his face is dejected, so I switched to Super Shotgun.
Oh.
And I was going to get the last kill with that. And I fucking missed him by a cut hair. He had, like, 5% health, and while that thing was, like, cocking and regenerating, I think he went after me with the plasma cannon, and before I could reload, he had me killed. And then he proceeded to go on a 50-kill run and win because it's best of 50. Because he did not let up. He just BFG'd my ass. Yeah, you were helpless. That was why it was the level so stupid. So
holy shit.
That's my problem here, listeners. I can't put my boot to someone's heel in a game. I'm not that ruthless. Physical competitions, I am. Gaming competitions, I'm not.
So, that's interesting.
That's a real life story. I fucked up a fairly prestigious for today Doom tournament.
Right. I think the way I can is it's like being an actor, really. You have to be able to say, okay, when I'm in this, when I have this hat on, I'm this guy, and these are the rules. And when I walk away from that, unlike our good friend Ass Cheek, who maintained that personality, that ruthlessness in all things at all times, when you walk away from the game table, you don't take away that unethical behavior. You just turn it on and off like the switch.
There is another thing in GoldenEye which relates, I think, specifically to the question of ethics, and that is a spawn pattern. And this applies to a lot of games. There in GoldenEye is a very specific spawn pattern to every single level. And some of those levels, like the stack... those spawn patterns can actually be reached in the amount of time that you are required to have to spawn back in. So the player can actually reach you before you spawn, point the gun where you are going to have to spawn, and then fire immediately when you spawn, killing you, and then run to the next point and do it over and over and over. Now, I'm of the opinion that even though that's part of the mechanics of the game and I think a flaw in the game, that it's still, I would say, over the line as far as ethics go.
I think we all agreed on that eventually. I think it took a lot longer.
Well, I disagree. I disagree. I couldn't do it myself, but I see that as ethical because if you fucked up just a little bit,
sure,
then it was the other guy's turn to do it to you. And in that way, so it's almost like you're at that point in a race for perfection, which is another type of game, but it's still a legitimate game.
In GoldenEye levels, you would spawn absolutely unarmed.
Slappers only.
And slappers only, and they wouldn't have slappers. Your opponent would be armed to the teeth.
RCP-90, rocket launcher, any of those.
Any of those brutal
God,
weapons.
God, that game was so awesome.
I mean, and we played one hit kill, so we played, what was it, License to Kill?
Yeah, License to Kill mode.
That's... So a grenade is devastating. They spawn, you launch a grenade anywhere near them, they're dead.
Yeah, you touch the fire, you're dead.
Yeah, it's like a flying death cloud.
It really is.
So the compromise we settled on was, you cannot shoot at your opponent. You cannot fire at them, since one bullet will kill them.
Yep.
You can't do that until they have a gun.
Yeah.
But then this became this ridiculous kind of toying with the mechanic, where I would follow you with my scope right on the back of your head until the instant you picked up a weapon, and then I would kill you anyway.
Yeah.
So it would basically become irrelevant, because it would be like spawn camping anyway.
Yep.
Which is, the term coined for it. Isn't it called spawn killing or
spawn camping?
Camping. The designers had this in mind at least a little bit, because if you were close enough to a spawn, they would skip that spawn and jump to the next one.
But that didn't help, because there was this line that you could not cross, and you could still see them at their spawn point. And so we just figured out where those lines were, and we wouldn't cross them, and then we'd kill them instantly anyway.
Yeah, I think the ethics of that we battled on until the bitter end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think it's, looking back, I'd say that's unethical behavior, because you have an advantage that I don't think was ever intended to be a part of the game mechanics.
I agree, that was not intended.
Wait, can I disagree? Because I still think that you have to get it for an initial kill on somebody before this can even happen. So there's an element of skill there, and the other guy had a chance to prevent you from doing it. And then again, you can't fuck this pattern up. Like, look, think of how many rules you came up with just exploring the limits of the game. Well, we found that we couldn't get this close to the respawn player, or I would follow him with my scope to his head to pick them. I mean, there's a skill to that, too. You guys were still playing
politics. It became
exhausting.
You were
playing a fair, ethical game. It just wasn't the game the player, the developers intended you to play.
I agree to a point.
It's a crazy game of diplomacy is what it evolves to.
No, see, I agree to a point, but the problem is, and GoldenEye specifically, is that you would spawn probably 30 feet from a weapon with no weapon. And so if they had any weapon, really, they would have this massive advantage on you because you could never reach them in time. And like 99.999% of the time, you couldn't reach the weapon in time either. Like even if they missed four or five times, you still weren't within range of getting a weapon or of killing them. So it was less about that skill and more about how many bullets can I put in that direction when he spawns.
Right. It's kind of like the old Western, and I'm spacing the name on it right now, where the villain would throw a pistol at the foot of the person he wants to murder.
Yeah.
And he'd say, reach for it.
Exactly.
You know? And as soon as they touch it, blammo! They're
except
gone.
In this game, he threw the pistol into a well and said, go for it.
I'm still saying that in my view, you guys are still playing a game of first kill wins.
But it was not intended by the designers to work that way.
Because the first person that killed the other could then just keep running the pattern and win forever. But that first kill had to have some kind of true skill involved in making it.
Yeah.
So you were playing this bizarre, like, first to one frag version of deathmatch with just really elaborate rules.
Yeah, I think the ideal was floating through at least my head was that, wow, that first game of skill and what it took in order to beat my opponent, in order to get that single kill, is the experience that should be had for each and every individual kill.
Yeah.
And the design of the maps and the whole spawn order kind of goes against the ideology. So maybe the whole game was broken because, I mean, what we're talking about is having a game where your map is designed where two players spawn in a separate map, get as many weapons as they want, and then choose where they want to spawn at any given point. You know, that would totally be okay, skill against skill alone for every kill, because each player would be equally geared to the teeth, and they would choose where they want to enter the world so that the opponent, who they could monitor in real time, would not have the map advantage. I don't even know if that kind of game exists.
Well, actually, I designed a series of maps called No Cheap back in the Doom 2 days that addressed that, because with Doom, you could, the person not only teleported into predictable patterns, but they were heralded by this flash of green light before they even arrived. So you could fire at the flash of green light and kill them before they had a chance to do dick. And
yeah.
Also, you spawned with a pistol in Doom. You never spawned with anything greater than that.
Yep.
So what I did is I built my maps in such a way that I hid the respawn points inside walls that were had a one-way texture on them. So if you were in this respawn chamber, which I call the pod, you could look out of it, but no one could see in. And there was a double-barrel shotgun that you spawned on top of. So you instantly spawned with, like, where no one could see you, but you could see the other. So almost like flip the advantage around.
Yeah.
That if a heavily armed opponent is right in that room, you can stay in there until he passes, or you can choose to try to challenge him with the double barrel shotgun and get the drop on him from behind. So it's like it turned it to where it was impossible for someone to just grab a powerful weapon and start running routes, because now the almost a respawnee had a little bit upper hand. And it was insanely successful, got quite a bit of internet buzz at the time, got included in a few of the big Duango map collections, and it was really known for insanely high kills and like really even-handed, very skillful play, because it eliminated some of the bullshit that was coded in Doom itself.
Yeah, I agree. I remember that. I remember you showing me that map at your house years ago, back when you created that, Aaron. I was very impressed. I, to this day, thought it was a pretty good, a great idea for a map.
Me and Ace Jace like playtested the shit out of that system until we found something that came up and worked. So
I would have to say, though, as far as the ethics are concerned of spawn killing, I would have to say once and for all, definitively, my personal opinion is that that is unethical behavior.
I would tend to agree with that. One thing I do want to talk about, we've talked about like the equality of information, we've talked about sportsmanship, and this kind of goes along with sportsmanship. What do you guys think about ethics as relates to quitting a game in the middle? Like, let's say you've got a game of Risk or a game of Axis and Allies or whatever, and you are up against my dad, for instance, and he so profusely and brutally berates you after you attack him that you just up and quit. And this has happened a few times in the games that I've played where people just are fed up with it and they quit. And I've done it myself.
It really depends. Like, some people will leave a game because leaving screws over the party, or some it really messes things up.
Just to spite people?
I think there are some okay times to leave a game. For example, playing
when
with
your
father. You have to
pee really bad.
No, I'm not talking about breaks. I think those are fine whenever you need them. I think that leaving, just straight up saying you quit and walking away, is ethically fine if someone is harassing you. And at that point, it's basically they're pushing you away. It's not really your choice when you're being harassed. It's actually kind of like if say your dad was in his most extreme moment, and it's just you and him left at the table, and you realize I'm not having fun, he's not having fun, and this isn't what I signed up for. I'm out of here, guys. I would respect that, because you're identifying that his behavior is inappropriate, and by leaving, he gets what he wants. He gets the victory, but it basically becomes a tasteless victory because, you know, he had to be an asshole, and he didn't actually win by skill. He won by being a dick and by driving you off. And I think that I would respect the person that walked away in that situation more than the person that actually, you know, is the dragon sitting on their loot after, you know, being unethical and screaming at someone. I think this is leading into a good topic of griefing.
Yeah.
Griefing in a game, is that probably not ethical? Probably it's not ethical. If you're talking about griefing in a game...
I want to read into the record the fact that the very first multiplayer online game on the internet you ever played, your first fucking thing to do was to grief a whole server. Before griefing was even invented. Griefing,
yeah, before the term was coined.
It was so ridiculously effective. You like shut down a whole server in rage.
Guilty as charged. I confess.
Should I tell the story?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I've got this game. It's called like Warbirds, the World War II flying simulator. So I have Peter over my house, and I've got this nice little flight yoke and a fairly professional setup. And I'm showing him how to play the game, and he takes over the yoke with my fucking character name. And he starts and I leave the room. And he starts broadcasting over the public channel. You motherfuckers ain't shit. You guys can't play. I can fly. I'm in the shittiest plane. Anyone that wants to meet, say otherwise. And he's like getting people just insanely inflamed. Like, and they're like, where the fuck are you? We're going to teach you some. Because this is back. No one had seen such a horrible thing before. They were witnessing. It's like coming in expecting to see a puppy.
It's like the invention of the lie.
Yeah, it really is. And so Peter is flying on the edge of the map. There's a volcano, and he's gone into the crater of the volcano, and he's doing circles. So he cannot be seen on radar, nor can he be seen visually. And he keeps telling these guys, I'm at such and such a map coordinate, blah, blah, blah. And they would all fly to get into a dogfight. And because there is an honor system, like people you could challenge, and then you had to go fly to where they're at and meet above this place. And so Peter was using that meta mechanic to lure all these guys in and just berating and taunting them.
It worked.
And he did this. He basically would fly in a volcano until he ran out of gas, and he would crash, and he would get in the airplane and do it again.
Yeah, it was the most fun.
I find that absolutely hilarious. I don't think they did, and I would probably say that was slightly unethical.
Oh, darn. Oh, I'm guilty. Yes. Charged.
So now, please, Peter, get on your high horse about griefing. After you, the father of the lie, will now talk about dishonesty.
Those scum. Those villainy.
I'll meet you at the volcano and we'll discuss it. Oh my god. Yeah, I'm a dirty griefer.
Everybody is guilty of that at one point or another. I know I've done it. It's just a bit of fun that people have when they first join a game and they're not too serious about it. And I don't know. It's fun for a little while.
Well, I mean, you could say that, but then I've played World of Warcraft for the last 5 years, and I spent an entire 4 hours in the afternoon 2 days ago going to a town where there are low-level characters and killing them and destroying their way out of the town and spawn camping their corpses for four hours.
Why does the game let you do that? That seems retarded.
See, bullshit. I call bullshit on that. I want a game to let me do that.
So you want an unethical game? Let me tell you about...
I want a game that allows me freedom. I think people will come together and eventually find a way to cooperate enough to where the game is playable. I don't think there are just going to be assholes everywhere killing people all the time.
I think there's a great wild excitement to an open like concept like that. And in the past, there have been game worlds that are all about that. And they're like Ultima Online, I never played it. My fiance does. And, well, at least she did for years back when it was popular. I think it's like the servers are burned down now. But that was a game where you could grief to your heart's content because there was only policing in towns. There were NPCs.
Richard Garriott has taken the computers that were running Ultima and is turning them into rocket ships.
Lord British in space.
Yep.
He's colonizing the moon, one piece of junk at a time.
Anyway, this whole griefing idea was even more brutal because, unlike World of Warcraft, by the way, you can only do that on PvP-enabled servers. There are some servers that are completely toned down and friendly, so there's no way you can do that anytime ever. But I happen to play on a PvP server because I have a griefer in me. Okay. Now, when it comes to the old-style games, you would drop all your loot. Like, you would work months for items, and you would have this super deity player, spawn out of the seventh level of heaven or hell, and suddenly be on your ass, kill you if you're in a dangerous spot where shit like this happens, kind of like little thief areas developed in the game map. And if you wandered down the wrong path or you didn't have an escort, you would suddenly find yourself attacked by a more experienced and more powerful player, and you would drop your weapon, all your loot, your money, and everything and be sent way away. Like your spirit like would be spawned way away and they would take everything from you and completely rob you.
Yeah, in fact, you spawned in your underwear, if I recall correctly. Because I remember there was a peasants' uprising.
That's how I spawn every day.
Where they, like, these guys that were pissed off about this showed up outside Lord British's castle. Like, thousands of them in their underwear. They protest.
That's amazing.
See, that stuff is cool, in my opinion. I agree.
And, see, I would kind of draw the line there where there's a difference between griefing and killing characters who have no chance of ever killing you. Because I think if they wander into your area, like let's say a level 2 wanders into a level 60s area, well, guess what? He's going to get brutally raped. That just that's how it works. Now, if a level 60 goes into a town full of level 2s, like you were saying...
What? Exactly. I can't hear you. There's something wrong with
and
the connection.
And starts totally thrashing everyone, and when they respawn, he kills them again. Like, that's something entirely different. I think, like, I always use, as MMO examples, the game Eve, and that's exactly how Eve is set up. Now, if you wander, there are areas where you can be protected by the police, and essentially you're invincible because no one is stupid enough to come in there and challenge the police. However, if you wander into these areas where they're ruled by the high-level players, guess what? You're dead immediately, and you lose everything you've got. So I think there's that line that can be drawn there where you can be an asshole for killing people that are lower level, or you could just be playing the game how it's essentially meant to be played. There is one more thing about ethics that I wanted to talk about, and as an avid FPS player, at least in the past, this has affected me time and time again, and that is team stacking. What do you guys think about team stacking?
Can you describe that to me? Because I don't know what that is.
Yeah, the term team stacking basically refers to when you have a server full of people and all of the people who are really good join the same team. And it could also mean that all of the people who are good friends or in communication directly join the same team, so they have this tighter teamwork that makes it basically impossible for the other team to have any fun or win.
I think that's a... that's a tough one. Because I've been on teams like that, and what Warcraft did is they actually made the game mechanic where it's easier to do that, where you can actually get a pre-made together very quickly and join as a group as opposed to as an individual. And I think that approach works because you can decide that I want to play this game as a loner, and hopefully I'll be against a team that's just like us, and the odds will be even. Or, you know, you're going to, a lot of times if you join as a group, be matched against people who joined as a group. So it makes the odds of one unbalanced team encountering a pre-made less likely, because pre-mades tend to be matched with other pre-made groups.
Do you know ahead of time going in if you're against a pre-made or not?
You can look at a little tab and then see where everybody's from. And if it looks like they're all from the same server, odds are they're pre-made.
That works pretty well as far as I'm concerned. As long as they give you the option to then not join that game if you see you're up against a pre-made and you don't feel like playing against that.
I don't think it's unethical to have a pre-made group that works together. I think that's the height of fun. But I do think it takes away the fun from new players, and it makes a lot of new players not even try certain games, because they know they'll be destroyed.
Yeah, just in like Counter-Strike, for instance, which is where this has happened a lot to me, there's kind of this expectation of everyone you're going up against is kind of an individual, and they may have good teamwork, but it's not pre-planned.
It used to piss me off until I realized I can always leave, you know? And what I find is usually when you're playing a game like that where a team is dominating, what happens is... the other team starts just not playing and goes away, and then they don't have their fun anymore.
When you play a game like that for a while, you begin to develop friendships on different servers with people.
Yeah.
And those are the servers you enjoy playing on, so you go to those servers, and you'll usually have one, maybe two of those. Mm-hmm. And then when it happens on those servers, you don't really want to leave because that's kind of where your home base is.
Well, true.
So, I mean, you still have the option to leave, but it's not really much of an option. You're going to be having less fun either way.
I always had two or three servers like that, and so you just roll to the next one.
Okay, I think that's going to just about do it for the show. I'd like to give a shout-out to our Polish listener, our first Polish international listener.
Heard any good jokes lately?
If you have any questions or comments, or you just want to chat, as always, you can visit our forums at www.baldmove.com or send us an email. Or send us an email at blueyonder@baldmove.com.
Especially you, Polish dude. We want to hear from you.
Yes, and send it in Polish so we can't even read
it. Mail me a sausage.
I bet his accent is sexy.
Or, if you want, you can now reach us by phone at 1-800-EAT-A-BAG-OF-BOBBITS. And with that said, until next time, I'm Jim Jones.
And I am Peter Street.
And I'm Aaron Hubbard. Ciao.
Who didn't know how to use their spells and abilities, the tank, who couldn't hold aggro to save his life, and also are.
I have no idea what the fuck he's life. Talking about.
Huh?
Yeah.
Tank, what, you know, all that stuff.
Oh, right.
I can't even tell what you're saying. Is the mic on your fucking head? God, you don't have a mic shoved in your ass, do you? Because that's what it sounds like.
It actually sounds okay for my end.
Anyway, on with the show.
Hey, because I was feeling this, that, and the other, it made my actions okay, when what you really mean is they make them understandable.
Possibly.
God, your fucking audio, man. Stop digging in the refrigerator.
I don't know what the hell...
He's making goddamn barrels again.
Yeah, it's real distracting.
Extremely. What were you? You were digging in the fridge, weren't you? Like, I'm not joking. You were, weren't you?
Guilty as fucking charged.
See? See? I could tell. Like, it was that clear. I could actually fucking tell what you were doing.
You're like echolocation. You're like fucking Daredevil over there.
And now he's opening, what's that? Not a Pepsi, a Coke. I can tell.
That's the distinct sound of Coca-Cola.
All right, well, that's just going to fuck my ass twice on Sundays. And it's not even Sunday, so tomorrow I'm getting fucked twice in the ass.
It's over.
All right, well, I think that's just going to bow. Fuck. Just going to bow.
You going to bow
just
out?
Yo, I think I'm just going to bow. Fuck my ass. I think I'm just going to bow and be stupid on a podcast. Just come out, jump off a fucking cliff because I'm a fucking moron. Ah.